ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
I offer my respectful obeisances to my spiritual masters, Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So, we'll talk about several principles tonight through which one can enhance one's life, which means really one's spiritual life, because real life means spiritual life. We're not meant for the material world, although we tolerate it, and some way or another we become inventive and we learn how to get through it. But our main pursuit in life is how to advance spiritually. And I want to talk about a few principles that Krishna discusses in the Bhagavad Gita that are favorable to spiritual life, or that are also a symptom of one who's advancing in spiritual life. So the first one is friendliness. This an interesting word, which we can look at the etymology of in our new etymological dictionary. So imagine if you're traveling somewhere. And what city are you from, Vrindasevika? What's it called? I can't hear. St. Petersburg, that's a famous city. Okay, say you're traveling somewhere in the world that's not St. Petersburg. Like, for instance, which parts of America have you been to? Salt Lake City? Okay, let's say you're in Salt Lake City. You've been there? Okay. What parts have you actually been to in America? Portland, Oregon, of all places. Okay, say you're in Portland, Oregon. The state flower is the rose, I think. And, you know, you just happen to hear somebody speaking your language and your dialect. Because, you know, it's not an overly ethnic city that I know of, but if you hear somebody speaking your language and it sounds like where you're from, in St. Petersburg. Can you distinguish the dialect or the accent from St. Petersburg as compared to other parts? In America, there's a southern accent, there's a northern accent, there's a New York accent, so forth. So let's say you're traveling some foreign place, and then you recognize the language that would be very easy to pick up, and maybe even the dialect that sounds like the region you're from. Then you feel a connection to those people. You might even, hey, St. Petersburg, that's where I'm from. You make a connection because you have something in common. We, as living entities, look for commonalities. It's not just humans. Have you noticed it in animals too? Is there an old saying, something about that? About birds? Birds of a feather? Correct. 5 points. Birds of a feather flock together. So I was looking out my window. I can see a lot of trees and area in the sky from my dining room window when I was looking out. I was just noticing that the birds hang out with their own kind. The blackbirds hang out with the blackbirds, and the seagulls, they fly with seagulls, geese with geese. I don't see geese and crows hanging out together. Crows like their own. So we look for commonalities. Of course, in the material world, there's nothing that's common because there are differences everywhere. And the main commonality we find on the spiritual platform. Therefore, one of the most famous verses, which Vidyavinaya Sampane, Mukharavinda will produce for us, is the symptom of a learned person is that he or she sees the spiritual nature of every living being. So this is 518. The translation is, the humble sages, by virtue of true knowledge, see with equal vision a learned and gentle brahmana, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog-eater, outcast. So this is the nature of a learned person, sees the commonality. So just as if you're in Portland, Oregon, you hear somebody speaking your language, then you might feel an immediate connection. So a person who's enlightened feels a connection to all living entities, because that person who's realized that he or she is a spirit soul and not the body relates to people on a spiritual level, and therefore feels a friendship, a natural friendship towards other living entities, just the same way as you would feel a natural friendship to somebody that you met from your own, that has something in common with you. You might even notice it right away and be attracted to relating with them as a friend, because there's a commonality there. So this is something that Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita in several places. One of the places is in the 11th chapter. If you look at the very end of the 11th chapter of the Gita, which is which verse? 55. Here it is, 55. I'll say it, please repeat. Mat karma krin mat paramo. Mat bhakta sangavarjitaha. Nirvaira sarvabhuteshu. Yasama meti pandava. And the translation is, my dear Arjuna, he who engages in my pure devotional service, free from the contamination of fruitive activities and mental speculation, he who works for me, who makes me the supreme goal of his life, and who is friendly to every living being, he certainly comes to me. Friendly to every living being. That's kind of nice, isn't it? And find in the 12th chapter where Krishna says that too. So he says it in several places, that this is the nature of somebody who comes to him. And also in the 12th chapter, Mukharavinda will produce this verse that in which Krishna says, in 12:18 through 19, he says, one who is equal to friends and enemies is equipoised in honor and dishonor, heat and cold, happiness and stress, fame and infamy, who is always free from contaminating association, always silent and satisfied with anything, doesn't care for any residence, who is fixed in knowledge and is engaged in devotional service, such a person is very dear to me. You find me something else in that chapter? Here it is. It's 13 and 14. 12, 13, and 14 starts off, one who is not envious but is a kind friend to all living entities. See? Proof positive. Right there in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna said it twice. This is what Krishna says makes a person dear. You're friendly to all living entities. One who is not envious but is a kind friend to all living entities. Such a person is very dear to me. So this is the first principle that is extremely important, to be friendly. And when you see living entities as spiritual beings, and you recognize your commonality with them, and you're not envious of them, and a reason to be not envious is that the world is in perfect control. Krishna's fulfilling the desires of every living entity, and therefore, one needn't worry if someone appears to have more than us, or less. We shouldn't also try to become envious and dominate them because they appear to be not as well off materially speaking as us. We see them as being in perfect harmony with the world, which is controlled by Krishna. In fact, this is mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that a person should see that the world is in perfect order. It may not be working according to my plan. Is that possible? Very possible. I may have one plan in it that's going in a different direction, but it is definitely working in perfect order. It's just that my plan isn't completely aligned with Krishna. Therefore, Krishna says to relieve that situation, just surrender to me and my plan, and make my plan your plan. Then you won't feel it as much, the changes. So, friendliness. And this can be practiced, of course, not artificially, but if we follow, which what is the word in the Shri Upanishad for following the authorities who describe how living entities are spiritual? Yeah, very good, for 10 points. You've got 15 over there now. Okay, so 10 points. And the verses in the Shri Upanishad 6 and 7 talk about the ways that we should see all living entities as spiritual sparks, as quality one with the Lord. And in that way, we become a true knower of things. And that we should also do it systematically. Anupashyati, thank you, means that you should follow the instruction of the Shastra. Anu means to follow. And Pashyati means you should see like that. So adjust your vision to see that living beings are spiritual beings. For instance, the other day I saw an earthworm crawling across my garden. He was going across the pavement. And I felt a kind of kinship with him. I mean, he's an earthworm, so he doesn't have really the same shape as I do. And, you know, it was really hard to kind of like have a conversation, although I did say a few words to him. He didn't speak back. But I still felt a kinship because I was remembering, I just chanted the chapter of the Bhagavad Gita in which Krishna describes how the consciousness illuminates the whole body, just like the sun lights up the universe. And I was looking at the little earthworm, seeing him squirm through the rain, and I was thinking, there's a conscious spiritual being within that worm. And I felt a kind of a momentary communion, like, hey, all right, Hare Krishna. I felt friendly. I appreciated his little journey, too. I was thinking, you know, it's hard. First of all, I couldn't figure out how he knew where he was going. I mean, that's also interesting for a conscious being like that that doesn't have very developed senses. I guess for the earth, you can smell it from a long way away or something. But to make a journey, I was thinking, how do you know it's better over here? Somebody tell you or what? But I felt his living presence in the earthworm. And it was a nice feeling. I felt friendly towards him. It's like, you know, we could be friends. We are. We're connected. The connectedness. This is an anupashyati. And so this can be extended in one's life by keeping this kind of vision. Of course, for the middle devotee, who's not on the Uttama Adhikari platform, which means that one doesn't naturally see this, but sees it through the eyes of Shastra, one should interact with the world in deliberate ways. And the ways in which we're enjoined to interact with various kinds of people, as an example, is that when we find those who are spiritually minded, they're devotees, that they're worshiping God in some way, then we should make friendship with them, appreciate that we're kindred souls. And for those that are innocent, they're not really aware of spiritual practice, but they have nothing against it, they're open, then we should give kripa or mercy to try to do some good for them, help align them with the way in which they can become connected to spiritual practice. And then for those who are envious, and there are people that are predisposed to hating anybody who's favorable towards God, it's kind of a, you know, goes around the material world a lot. For those people, we're enjoined to make a wider path around them and not agitate them more by trying to needle them or try to convince them of something. We're just supposed to leave them alone. That makes life easier, right? Yeah. And so there are these three kinds of people that we're going to meet. And although we may see them as spiritual, we're careful to, and we may feel friendly towards them. At the same time, we're asked to interact with them according to their realization at the time. So these two things are going on at the same time. It doesn't mean we're not friendly towards them. In fact, for those that we avoid, says Jiva Goswami in his commentary on this verse, which is Ishvare Taradineshu, etc., in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, we should wish them well. We should think, how could this person be benefited, even though we don't make contact with them because it's not possible right now. So these are ways of being friendly. The best way to show friendship is to follow these three ways of interacting with people, and also to keep a general view that all living entities are part and parcel of Krishna. For such a person will not hate anything or any being, because he or she sees the connection between that person and Krishna, the source of everything. So friendliness, feel free to be friendly. And not only that, in a community like ours, one of the most important principles is friendliness. We could have a simple dwelling here without much opulence. We don't have much opulence here. We have a few straw baskets in the back, a few chairs here and there. Of course, we have the most opulent, beautiful deities and so forth. But, you know, it's not a big castle that you can see from the 101 freeway from 5 miles away or something like that. However, if inside we're very friendly, if when people come here we go out of our way to connect with them and find out what their needs are, their interests, their concerns, and make them feel at home, like a family atmosphere, like, oh, you came here, you're special, and you're friendly towards them, then you have the best of all environments, friendliness. So, for instance, here at ISV, we have a mission to keep the doors open and then extend ourselves to make people open their doors so we can give them books and meet them, is to be friendly. Find connections with people and make friends with them. And all good things happen from that. When people come, especially to a place like this, they might wonder, you know, what's going on here? And it might seem disorienting, a little bit different from what they're used to. However, friendship is something everybody can relate to, even animals. And I see stray animals, not necessarily wild ones, but, you know, like cats and stuff, they come through my yard sometimes. And I'm just friendly to them. They look at me like, you know, my friend, or are you going to try to kill me or something? You know, and as soon as I extend a little friendship, then, you know, they like it. They go, okay. They relax. They're okay. And they even reciprocate by, you know, saying, thank you very much. I like you too. So living entities respond to friendship and friendliness. And Krishna likes it to be friendly towards our living entities. By the way, where's the word come from, Shraddha? Let's hear the etymology. I found a new etymological dictionary.
So I'm reading from etymyonline.com. And for friendliness, actually it gave many words, many, quite a few. Like cordiality, amicability, benignity, homeliness, hospitality, neighborhood. And then I found one called Xenia, which was Xenia. And for Xenia, it says that it, you know, related to the word guest and from the Pai root, which is the Proto-Indian root, it comes from Ghosti.
Ghosti from Sanskrit.
From Sanskrit, yeah.
And Ghosti means?
Ghosti actually was stranger, guest, and host. Those are the three words it said.
Okay. And which reminds us that the in very advanced cultures, when a guest comes to your home, even if it's an unknown person, then you extend hospitality and you take care of them. In fact, in Indian culture, it's considered that an uninvited guest is one of the incarnations of Krishna, so you should worship that person, take him care of him or her.
Yeah.
Yes?
Yeah, and some of the words were related to love also, like friendliness was also related to the word love.
Okay.
Some of the words.
And what is the definition of the word?
It actually doesn't give the definition.
But just look in the dictionary.
Yeah, so I did have the dictionary up there. And but for friendliness, it just says you to behave in a friendly manner. And then, yeah, and then friendly says kind and pleasant. They were friendly to me. Like
kind
she gave
and
me
pleasant.
A kind and pleasant.
Okay, that's a good idea.
Yeah, and then...
Be kind and pleasant towards others.
Yeah, yeah. And then friend, actually, the origin of the word friend is from, it's from German origin. And related to Dutch, vriend. And German Freund.
Freund, yeah. Freund.
Freund. And then also from Indo-European root, meaning to love.
To love.
Yeah.
Okay. And so it's really, if one is evolved spiritually, it's not an artificial kind of love. What do you have there?
We say it's Gopavrinda. So Vrinda is Vrind. So Gopavrinda is like
Vrind.
All the friends
okay.
of the Gopas.
So the idea is there. So that's the first principle. So feel free to be friendly and also go out of your way to be friendly, especially here at ISV. This is the most important aspect of our community here is friendliness. So there are ways in which you can feel free to extend yourself to others and be friendly towards them. Not just people who walk in the door for the first time, but everybody. And also remember that everybody needs friendship. Human beings don't do well in isolation. The science of sociology talks about this, about how we're dependent on others. And the more that we support one another in friendship, the more we can thrive. So everybody's struggling in this world. And if we remember that, and we extend our friendship, our love, try to encourage and help people and support them when they need it, emotionally and otherwise, this is a kind of friendship. And this is what makes a community very attractive. Okay? So what was the first point?
Friendliness.
Friendliness, okay. Be a kind friend. Krishna says, we read in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that he gives this instruction. He said, be a kind friend to all living entities. Such a person will be eligible for spiritual advancement. And he also said that such a person is very dear to me. One who is not envious, but is a kind friend to all living entities. Such a devotee of mine is very dear to me. So Krishna likes it when you're friendly. Okay, so before I go into the next one, I have five altogether. Let's hear some reflections on friendliness. Anything you heard so far that stuck?
Yeah, thank you, Guru Maharaj. That's, I like your example with a worm, how you establish connections with that worm, and how do you feel it? It takes, I think, I don't know, it should be on that level, or it takes practice to be attentive to all, not only to humans, to all living entities, and try to feel what they feel and what they're, to respect also them.
Yeah. You know, somebody who sees the spiritual spark within every living entity will respect all life, be deeply appreciative that is a living entity that's just like me. Same spiritual level, and that Krishna is there too. Wherever the living entity is, the Krishna is also there within the heart. So the world is actually a sacred place. And as described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the entire world, the earth, the universe, it's really an external body of God. So it's a sacred earth. What to speak of the living entities who are not dull matter, they're actually spiritual beings that are part and parcel of Krishna. What other things did you hear? Yes.
Human beings don't do well in isolation, and we all need friendships.
That's right. Human beings require various relationships in order to survive. Human beings, when they're isolated, don't do that well. Yes. So that bodes well for spiritual community also. If you build a community that's based on spiritual principles, the idea of friendliness, kindness, extending yourself is extremely important. It should be even more prominent in a spiritual community, going out of your way to be kind and kind and pleasant to others. Hey, welcome. Who's on the phone? Somebody's shoveling snow somewhere. Okay, go ahead.
Just a little different context, but I was remembering in your book, Our Family Business, you mentioned this. The Nectar of Devotion, Srila Prabhupada describes two ways in which a devotee becomes an intimate friend of the Lord. The first is to act as the confidential servant of the Lord, and the other is to act as the well-wisher of the Lord.
Yes, and one of the ways to do that, as mentioned there, is to distribute knowledge about Krishna. That's how you're considered a friend. So we always say that distributing Bhagavad Gita, for instance, which all of you do, going here, there, you put yourselves out, literally, into the great wide world, and you distribute Bhagavad Gita. This is a kind of a friendship, a way of developed friendship with Krishna. From the Pundit's Pit over here, I quote a couple verses that support the ideas of seeing all living beings spiritually and therefore not hating anyone or any being, etc.
Yasmin sarvani bhutani atmaiva bhutvijanatah tatrako mohakashoka ekatvam anupashyatah. One who sees all living entities as quality one, no, as spiritual sparks, as quality one with the Lord, is a true knower of things. What then can be illusion or anxiety for him?
Yeah, let's look at the verse, please. Thank you. This is number 7. She just quoted from the Isha Upanishad. Isha Mantra 7. Yasmin means in the situation, sarvani, all, bhutani, living entities. So it means all living entities. And Atma, the chitkana, or spiritual spark. So this chitkana means that the living entity is of a specific nature. It's spiritual, and it's called chitkana. It's a particle of consciousness, and it's connected eternally to Krishna. It's simultaneously one and different from Krishna, chitkana. Eva, only, abhut, exist as, vijanataha, one who knows. Tatra, therein, ka, what? So this question is being asked that what kind of illusion or anxiety could a person who has this vision be in? Because ekatvam, such a person sees the oneness of all living beings, anupashyataha, one who sees through authority or one who sees constantly like that. So this is the secret to friendliness, is really having this. So she gave us a really important verse. Someone else quote another verse as a hint. It's right next to this one. Go ahead. You give her the mic, but you can coach her, because I can. She just needs the first or second word. You quoted mantra 6, yastu sarvani bhutani, right? Or you did 7. So this is 6. You can look at the board if you want, because then you'll remember it.
Yasmin sarvani bhutani atmani anupashyati sarva bhuteshu chatmanam ekvatam anupashyatah.
Almost. Yastu sarvani bhutani Do it again.
Yastu sarvani bhutani atmani manupashyati sarva bhuteshu chatmanam tatrana vijagupshate.
It's good to work with these verses because the more times you say them, and especially if you say it the wrong way and then you look at it again, it kind of builds, it starts building your relationship with the verse. Then you get, it becomes automatic, right? So there's one thing to learn it when we're reciting them, and then when you have to pull it out and say it. So the more you practice doing that, and the more mistakes you make, the stronger you'll get. So this one says something similar. Ya, and it's saying he who. So anyone who does this, sarvani tu, but sarvani bhutani, again about the living entities, all living entities. Atmani means it sees their relationship with the original divine source, Krishna, the Supreme Lord. Eva only, anupashyati, again the word is used, to see in a systematic way, sarva bhuteshu, every living entity, cha atmanam, the super soul, ta, thereafter, na vijagupsate, means hates anyone. And the translation is, you can read it.
He who sees systematically everything in relation to the Supreme Lord, who sees all living entities as his parts and parcels, and who sees the Supreme Lord within everything, never hates anything or any being.
Yeah. So these verses point out this sublime state of awareness of all living entities being connected to Atmani, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then such a person doesn't hate anything or any being. Sees the connection to the Supreme Lord. Shamalangi. Well done.
So I just came across another verse which has something, which has a similar meaning, because we have Bhakti Vaibhav exam this Sunday. So there is one verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Sthabar jangum dekhe na dekhe tar murti sarvatra hoy nijo ishtadev spurti. So like a Mahabhagavat, he sees everything living and non-living, but actually he doesn't see the form. He sees the super soul within every living entity. I'm not exactly sure of the whole meaning, but
so. Yes, nice. So this universal vision, seeing everything connected to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Other thoughts about friendliness before I move on to the next point? What does it mean, friendly? Be kind and pleasant? Yes, one, two.
Be attentive.
Attentive, okay. Yes.
Maharaj, when you were saying about friendliness, the verse that came to my mind was how Krishna has set, how he displays his own example when he says, Surudam Sarva Bhutanam, that I am the well-wisher of everyone.
Nice. Very good. Krishna's disposition towards every living entity is friendly. Even if somebody's averse, he still remains a friend. And he's simply waiting to exercise his friendship as much as possible. And bhakti means when the living entity turns his face, her face, towards Krishna and decides to be friendly towards Krishna. This is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhayam dvitiya binibesha tasyad ishad apetasya viparyajo smriti tanmayato tanbura abhijetam bhaktyaika yesham gurudevatatma. This verse says that the source of fear in this world is forgetting our connection with Krishna and seeing that anything separate from our original divine source, Krishna. When we lose that sense of connectedness towards other living beings, we don't see that they're connected to God, we don't see other things connected, or we see this body as we think this is myself, and I make that illusory mistake, then bhayam, fear arises. And then I develop a competing mentality with Isha, who's the Supreme Controller. I'm definitely not the Supreme Controller, but there is a Supreme Controller, and if I cooperate with him, then life is a lot better. And then it says, Tanmayata Buddha Abhajetam Bhaktyaika Yesha Gurudevatatma. The solution really is to give your full attention, you mentioned this. Give your full attention, one point of attention, towards Isha, towards Krishna, and make Krishna the prime goal of your life. Then you turn things around. It's something that anyone can easily do. Okay, yes.
Be genuine in your friendship. Be truthful in your friendship.
Yes.
There are different levels of friendship. So when we love Krishna, the same way we should love everybody else. That's what that's what I got from this, from your friendship verse.
Yeah. When we see the connectedness, yeah, then it's natural. And Prabhupada warns in the verses that we just read, the Sri Upanishad 6 and 7. He said, don't try to artificially imitate Mahabhagavata. Mahabhagavata, one who actually is wholly absorbed in this vision that everyone is connected with Krishna, everyone's a spirit soul, really has developed acute spiritual vision. If I don't have that, but I artificially try to treat everybody the way a Mahabhagavata might treat, this is an artificial way. That's why I quoted the verse Ishvara Tadadineshu, which mentions that we should make discriminations between the various kinds of living entities. So supporting your point that our friendship shouldn't be artificial. Okay. Shraddha, I can see you got something there. There's a couple more. This friendship thing has really taken off. It's becoming popular all of a sudden.
And it suddenly dawned on me on Krishna's friendly relationship with us. Like on the material world, on the material plane, there's a saying that friendship is like a china bowl. Once broken, can be mended, but the crack is always there. Mm. And but with Krishna, we break our friendship with Krishna, but then when we go back to Godhead, it's all a clean slate again, so there's no crack there.
Krishna's mercy.
Yeah,
Krishna's he can mercy. Fix stuff. Yeah. There was a couple more. There's a lot. 1, 2, 3.
Maharaj, from Karthik Man Chad, one verse popped in my mind. Yogi Yukta Vishuddhatma Vijitatma Jitendriya Sarva Bhutatma Bhutatma Kurvan Apina Lipa.
Yeah, let's put it up. That's a really good verse to look at. Tell us the verse number, please.
Five dot something. I don't know.
We'll get it.
Five, seven.
Tie goes to the runner. Okay. Yoga yukto vishuddhatma. Please repeat.
Yoga yukto vishuddhatma.
Vijitatma jitendriya.
Vijitatma jitendriya.
Sarva bhutatma bhutatma.
Sarva bhutatma
bhutatma. Kurvan api nalipyate. And the translation is one who works in devotion, who is a pure soul, and who controls his mind and senses, is dear to everyone, and everyone is dear to him. Though always working, such a man is never entangled. So let's read the purport. One who is on the path of liberation by Krishna consciousness is very dear to every living being, and every living being is dear to him. This is due to his Krishna consciousness. Such a person cannot think of any living being as separate from Krishna, just as the leaves and branches of a tree are not separate from the tree. He knows very well that by pouring water on the root of the tree, the water will be distributed to all the leaves and branches, or by supplying food to the stomach, the energy is automatically distributed throughout the body. Because one who works in Krishna consciousness is servant to all, he is very dear to everyone. And because everyone is satisfied by his work, he is pure in consciousness. Because he is pure in consciousness, his mind is completely controlled. And because his mind is controlled, his senses are also controlled. Because his mind is always fixed on Krishna, there is no chance of his being deviated from Krishna. Nor is there a chance that he will engage his senses in matters other than the service of the Lord. He does not like to hear anything except topics relating to Krishna. He does not like to eat anything which is not offered to Krishna. He does not wish to go anywhere if Krishna is not involved. Therefore, his senses are controlled. A man of controlled senses cannot be offensive to anyone. One may ask, why then was Arjuna offensive in battle to others? Wasn't he in Krishna consciousness? Arjuna was only superficially offensive because, as has already been explained in the second chapter, all the assembled persons on the battlefield would continue to live individually as the soul cannot be slain. So spiritually, no one was killed on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, only their dresses were changed by the order of Krishna, who was personally present. Therefore, Arjuna, while fighting on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, was not really fighting at all. He was simply carrying out the orders of Krishna. In full Krishna consciousness, such a person is never entangled in the reactions of work. There were two more points, and then we'll move on. One there? Okay, oh yes. Govindacharan Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
So as soon as Srivas Pandit Prabhu walked in, I was reminded of this verse.
I felt illuminated also.
I was automatically reminded of this verse, which talks about friendship and which is one of his favorite verses. So I thought of sharing that. This is a verse by Parikshit Maharaj. He's paying obeisances to the Brahmanas. This is in the first canto of the Bhagavatam. He says, Punascha Bhuyat Bhagavatyanante Prati Prasangasya Tada Shriyeshu Mahatsuvyamyam Upayami Srishti Maitri Astu Sarvatra Namod Vijayabhyaha. He says, praying obeisance to the Brahmanas. If you have to take birth again in this material world, he's asking for three things. One is attachment to the Supreme Lord. Second is attachment to his association of his devotees. And third is friendly relations to all living beings.
Nice. I like that.
Thank you.
Praise for friendly relations with all living beings. That's so nice, isn't it? We can really do this, can't we? I mean, it makes life infinitely interesting if one makes this a goal of life, to see everyone's connectedness with Krishna and makes appropriate friendships with them. Tries to be kind and, what was the other thing? Pleasant? Kind and pleasant. Okay. Was Arjuna kind and pleasant on the battlefield? No, he was. Actually, that was a point that, and this is a hard point for a lot of people to get because it's either black or white. But we're a mixture, meaning that we're in a bi-dimensional universe. We're spiritual beings, but we're ensconced in matter. And there, part of that is there are social obligations and there are ways that we have to perform certain duties. Because of our entanglement in the material world. It's complicated. It's complicated. So one has to follow certain kinds of protocol that relate to the body and the mind while in the world, at the same time while keeping in mind that one's an eternal spiritual being and that all living entities are also. So there may seem to be a dichotomy, but as pointed out by Krishna throughout the Bhagavad Gita, if one's purpose, as Arjuna's was, is aligned properly with Krishna, no matter what the activity is, one doesn't lose the spiritual connection even as one's doing that. Krishna gives the analogy of the lotus leaf that's in the water but it's never touched by water. And your homework is to go find a lotus flower and observe it for yourself, because when you see it, then you know what Krishna's talking about in the Bhagavad Gita. Otherwise, it's hard to understand. Homework? Find a lotus? You better wait till summertime. They don't like the winter. Okay, number two. First one was friendliness, right? Yes. Second is to identify the stages of your life. The life goes by in stages. Therefore, the system, the Vedic system, is set up in stages. For instance, the first stage of life in the ashrama system. Ashrama means protecting your self-interest. Being in a situation that protects your ultimate self-interest, keeping yourself in that way, so you don't become diverted into shrama. Shrama means unnecessarily working hard for no reason, where you don't get any benefit. And ashrama, or ashram, as they say in America, is a ostensibly a place where you live, but it's a situation for your life, as I'm saying here. It's a stage of your life through which you find the right activity and the right kind of association and the right occupation, so that you can progress in your life. So it's important to identify the categories in your life that match up with your psychophysiological nature, so that you can be happily engaged in spiritual life. And at different stages, we cultivate different kinds of practices in order to advance. The stages mentioned by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in spiritual life start with Sambandha Gyan, and then there's Abhideya, and then Prayojana. So that means cultivating knowledge properly, understanding what is what. Who am I? What's my purpose in life? What is my relationship with others? And then the practice has to be there. These are also categories of knowledge. And if we can, in a very practical way, find where we fit the best at any given stage in our life, so that we can continue our spiritual practice without interruption, this is a helpful way to advance spiritually. Or I would say it's essential, because it's really a good idea to try to put together one full lifetime of contiguous devotional service. If you can string it together, even if it's imperfect, and it will be messy, because the material world's a messy place. It's complicated. And if you can string together a lifetime of devotional service, piece it together by working within the various stages of your life appropriately, so you can continue your service one way or another, even if it's a little bit, a little connection with five that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said were the most essential five. Yeah, then you'll be successful. So stages are important. Find out where you're at and find out how to engage yourself appropriately in your particular stage of life. And then when the transition comes and you need to move to a new stage of life, then don't freak out. That's one of the things that throws people off oftentimes, is transition. They think that I'm moving from this to that, and therefore now I'm not worthy, or things are different, or I can't handle change. No, learn to handle change, because you're going to change. And you have to see, this is a stage. And in this stage, I do the best I can with what I have in this situation, and stay strong and connected as much as possible. And then when the next opportunity comes, take advantage of that. So stages. Take advantage of the stages of your life. And if you're teaching Krishna consciousness to others, for instance, in a community like ours here, we need to accommodate people according to the stage they're in. So like some people are beginners. Like it's the first time they've ever come. So if you try to put a beginner along with intermediates and advanced people who are practicing things they don't even understand, then they won't be successful. You have to accommodate them, and you have to have a beginner's place. When I was a kid, when my mom first took me to the swimming pool, learned how to swim, I remember there was a baby pool and an intermediate. And then when I played baseball, there was the minors, the intermediates, and the majors. And if you got thrown into the wrong category, then you'd be really, you'd feel out of place, and you wouldn't really feel comfortable there. So in our community, we also have to find out what are the various categories that people are in, and create those categories so that they're accommodated properly. Culturally, that's important too, because culture is a big thing. It's really hard to take the culture out of a person. So if you put, for instance, if you put a red-legged frog on the 101 freeway, he won't be very happy. But if you put him in a little pond with reeds and stuff like that, then he'll start croaking away. Give him a few dragonflies, he'll be even happier. So all living entities have to find their category.
And this is important for spiritual advancement. Find what category you're in and make the best of it while you're in it. And it doesn't matter what category you're in. It just matters how much you take advantage of it when you're in it. And again, to reiterate, for a spiritual community like ours, it's important to identify the categories of need that people have, their needs, interests, and concerns, and create an environment for them, a habitat where they can survive. So that's number two. What was number one? Be friendly. We're just trying to be friendly. Okay. And number two? Categories. It's really about categories. Make the best use of categories, fit in the right category, and also accommodate other people's categories. Find out what their habitat they need and create it for them. That's what spiritual community means, to be accommodating to people's categories according to their needs, interests, and concerns. Should I take reflections on this one? Yes. That's the answer. Please. Questions are the answer.
So the question actually relates back to, you said if one's purpose is aligned with Krishna, and for whatever reason I stopped writing at that point, but you said that if somebody is aligned with Krishna, I'm assuming the point was that you grow if you're aligned.
Yes.
Okay.
That's true, yeah.
So the question is, would you say that it's better if we recognize that there's something that we're getting a lot of input on, that we should focus on that one thing that we should grow on, or is it a better idea to try to focus on the culmination of a bunch of different things that we recognize that we need to work on?
I'm not sure I understand your question. Could you restate it in a more succinct way? Like,
sure. Is it better to focus on one thing at a time?
Well, you have to have both. It's like when you're walking upstairs. You do look at the stairs that you're stepping on, but you also have to be aware that you're going upwards and that there's a goal at the end. So you kind of do both at the same time, and we're really good at that as humans. There's kind of a gyroscope inside us. Not kind of. There is definitely a gyroscope inside that helps us go upstairs. Robotics experts? Do any of your robots climb stairs? They have a gyroscope inside so they can balance? Yeah? Gyroscope. So gyroscope, and we have to have vision. A vision means what I'm doing right now and what the ultimate goal is. Both things should be there. For instance, when I was writing a book, I really had to have some sense that there was an end to it, because it seemed like there wasn't. When I was in the middle of it, I could compare it to being in the middle of an ocean and just swimming. And I just, in one sense, I just keep swimming. Don't ask the big question, like, where's land? Because you don't have a right to ask that question yet. But you have to somewhere have a sense. I mean, other people have written books, and they're humans. And, you know, some of them I've seen are, you know, maybe not that bright even. You know, so if they did it, you know, you can too. So you see the ultimate goal, and you also see that keep moving, you know, right now, keep going. But you also have to have faith in the fact that there is land somewhere. Otherwise, you kind of give up. If I asked you to do push-ups and just do as many as you can, you know, you might give up after 10 or 15 or something like that. But if I said, do 20, then you can stop and we have pakoras for you. Then, you know, it's like you'd do 20 and then you'd go have pakoras because you know that's the goal. Any other points about categories? Yes. And stages of life.
So Maharaj, about transition, I was just thinking that change actually starts happening. Change is constant. Change is the only constant thing in this material world. It's happening all the time. And actually, in my previous company, it was supposed to be a value that we looked at in people when we were hiring them, that can you handle change in life or not, because that's a constant. And I was just reminded of that because the change is so slow that we are able to handle most of it, but when it's sudden, that's when we freak out really on the
And those are the transitions I'm really talking about. Yeah. And they are there. For instance, even if you look at astrology, there's major periods, transition periods, that are identifiable, that people go through in their lives. And there's definitely, according to our ages, there's different tendencies, proclivities we have at various stages of our life. You can measure it. And, you know, in children, when they're growing up, they have a certain psychology at one age, and then when they switch over into puberty, their psychology changes. Their outlook on life changes. Any parents here? Is this possible? Does it happen? Yeah. So this is a very scientific process, the spiritual process. It's meant to accommodate a whole lifetime, and therefore a transition is meant to be accommodated. And there should be an appropriate landing place. Where am I going to go next? That's important to have that, to know where one's moving towards. Otherwise, as travelers, you know, it's very, very difficult when you're traveling and you don't know where your next place you can rest is. The word travel comes from the word travail, which means an instrument of torture. So we like to know where we're going. We seek home, actually. That's why when we talk about going back to Godhead, we refer to it as home. And on your phone, you know, when they made the iPhone X and there was no home button, people freaked out. Where's the home button? We want that. We was like, I want to go home. Srivas Prabhu. 286. That's in the Bhagavatam. 286. Let's see it. Two eight six says, "Oh, Dautatma Purusha Krishna Paramulam Namunchati Mukta Sarva Pariklesha Panta Swasharanam Yata." And this verse says, "A pure devotee of the Lord, whose heart has once been cleansed by the process of devotional service, never relinquishes the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, for they fully satisfy him as a traveler is satisfied at home after a troubled journey." Perfect. Thank you very much. 30 points. Okay, and then something from the internet? Okay, from the internet. A text.
So Maharaj, there's one comment on the previous, on friendliness.
Yes.
Okay. So this is from Bhakt Jayant Kashikar from Boise, Idaho.
Boise, we like Boise.
And he said, I
Radhi
like...
Karman comes from Boise. He's our hero.
So he says, I like the point, aligned with Krishna's plan. This, in fact, is true even in the corporate world as well. So having, where we say aligned with the corporate strategy. So having one's plan aligned with Krishna's plan is a very good idea. And since Krishna is a true friend of every living being, it automatically makes us friendly to everyone if we keep our plan aligned with Krishna's.
That's nice. It's very nice.
And, yeah.
Okay.
Hansapriya Mataji sent some.
Hansapriya.
On categories, actually. Okay.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Rama Rama Hare Hare.
So she was reflecting that even at work, team building events talk about categories.
Categories, yeah. Do they?
And good. She has a very nice diagram, actually, deep into categories. And she says that there are eight steps. It's an eight-step category management cycle.
Okay.
It talks about, you know, define the category and assess the role of category, assess the performance in that category, set objectives and targets, devise strategies, and set the category tactics, and then implement.
Oh, please send it to me.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah,
Thank you.
I was just saying, like, even if you apply it to the life stages and the categories in life.
Yeah. Everyone needs to find their category and be comfortable. This is something Prabhupada brings up in the story of Gajendra. he emphasizes that, of course, Gajendra was an elephant. He didn't thrive in the water as much as the crocodile. So when the fight started, you know, who was going to win? Not Gajendra, because he was in the water. So Prabhupada goes on to say that everyone has to live in a natural state. And what is natural for one person will be unnatural for another. So you have to find the natural state of life where you have central strength, enthusiasm, in order to perform devotional service according to your category. So everyone should try to align themselves in the right category. And when you have that, then your devotional service will thrive. And what you have to do then is string together a lifetime of those well thought out strategy for this is my category right now. This is where I fit. This is where I have strength. This is where I feel natural in my life to perform devotional service. Okay, I'm moving on. Because we got two now. We got three to go. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay, the third one is to refine your practice. Don't take for granted that what you're doing and how you're doing it is fully effective. Because it's natural, and this is called niyamagraha, to settle in. It's very natural to settle in and think that whatever I'm doing now is good enough. That is the death of progress. When you get settled in and you think, first of all, that it's good enough, I got it down now. And even worse than that, and this can cap off that deathly mentality, which is I'm entitled. Because I've done it for a certain amount of time, or in a certain way, or I have a certain position, because I've been hanging around long enough, therefore I'm entitled to everything. You may or may not be, but you shouldn't take it. You should never feel entitled. And always feel that you can refine more. That's really the nectar of life. What to speak of devotional service is consider the fact that I can refine it more. So in our life, we should observe, how am I practicing? Is it really effective? For instance, you know, can I make it better? And how can I make it better? And in our community also, we may have settled into many kinds of ways of doing things. You know, we announce things in a certain way. We interact with new people who come in a certain way. But why? Well, because we've always done it like that. However, if we look at it carefully, we can refine it? One person said yes. Okay, yeah, you can. When you look at it and you brainstorm, we find in all different disciplines, if you look at them carefully and you go over them with people who are also practicing, who may be like-minded, who are like-minded and may be more advanced than you, they can give you tips on how to improve it. And if you observe, you know, where are the gaps? This is one of the ways to make progress in life, is to find out where the obstacles are. And don't hide them, but rather identify them and then deal with them. Because the more that you do, the more that you'll call your progress. So the third one is to refine. And also, don't assume that you're doing everything perfectly, but find out ways that you can improve on all levels, and work with the suggestions that you get and try to improve. And then you'll feel the nectar of life, because human beings like to improve, especially if they're in the mode of rajas and above. In ignorance, it's really hard to improve or even think of improvement. Any thoughts about refinement? Or about, what was the other thing I said? Refinement and not taking anything for granted. Yeah. Once you think you're it's good enough, you're finished. You can't make any more advancement. Prabhupada said you should always have a fresh challenge to try to rise and meet it. Try to do it better the next time. Comments, meaning reflections? Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj. I actually have a question. So when we are looking at refining our practice, we look at what is going well and what is not going well.
Yes.
Sometimes we focus more on positive, sometimes we focus more on negative. So how do we balance both, where we feel that I'm not worthless and we don't get depressed just by looking at the bad, the things that are not working out?
Well, one point is, and Krishna makes this, is when you're making a sincere endeavor, then no matter how rough it is around the edges, he appreciates it. Dadami buddhi yogam tam, and he'll give you more intelligence how to do it better and how to improve. And therefore he encourages us, neha bikramanashwasti prativayona vidyate swalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. He said even if you're doing a little bit, this is really good. And the Shastra is unlimitedly encouraging, and so is Prabhupada. There's so many statements that you can, if you read regularly, you'll see that they're urging us, like, you know, any little bit is really good. And if you try to do it better, that's even better. So remember the fact that, you know, whatever you're doing now is good and important. In fact, you can walk it way back and say, well, you know, I'm a human being. That's a rare thing. Labvam sudrulabham idam bahusambhavante. Srimad Bhagavatam says, hey, be happy you're human. You have an opportunity now to inquire. And tato brahma jignasa, you can ask these questions. And there are other statements that, you know, you reach the human form of life, it's a huge milestone. You can't even estimate how big that is. What to speak of then if you even have a little inclination towards spiritual life while you're human? That's huge. So you can start with those, but then move up from there and keep at least a 50% reserve for feeling a little pinprick that it could be better. That's the verse we quote so many times in this class, Jata Shraddha Makatasu Nirvina Sarvakarmasu, etc. This verse talks about how one may be performing devotional service, but then isn't up to the standard that one wants to be, doesn't have the strength to do it. But Krishna says, don't become morose. But he does say, keep a little gharyan, which means a little bit of remorse that I should be better. He said, but don't get overwhelmed by the feeling that I'm not good enough and then quit. One thing I think about oftentimes when I'm faced with that conundrum is to do the best I can with what I have right now. Because there's a tendency, the mind can trick us and say that don't do anything. Because you can't do everything that you want to, or you're not up to the standard, you might as well not do anything. But devotional service is potent, and especially if you keep going. Even a small fry who keeps going, I've seen it so many times. It's like, who's that? You know, nobody knows. But the person turns out to be, you know, a great hero because they kept doing their service. And that's really the secret. In fact, that's mentioned in the commentary to the verse Tate anukampam susamikshamanu bunjani vatmakutam vipakam, that tolerate whatever's happening to you and consider it the Lord's mercy, and then you'll inherit the kingdom of God. And Sridhar Swami says, main thing, stay alive. Somehow or other, stay alive. Figure out how to stay alive. Don't get knocked off your exalted position of practicing devotional service, however minuscule it may be. It's exalted. So don't get discouraged. That's a trick of Maya. Don't give up and keep going, because a big shot's just a little shot who keeps on shooting. You just keep shooting. Doing what you can with what you have right now, then you'll have breakthroughs that come by the grace of Krishna. And that happens in every discipline, but especially in devotional service. So Krishna is very attentive to those who are sincerely trying. Okay, yes, another one.
So Maharaj, I was thinking about the quitting part of it, where we are doing something and we quit because of the difficulties. So it's like if you have a bag of gold, and if you need a bag of gold and you have to go out and get it or earn it, and you face difficulties, so there's a tendency that you might give up that quest. But if somebody tells you that the bag of gold is inside your house, then you know, you will search for it because you know it's already there. And I was looking at the word refine. So re means again. So again, fine. So it means to make it pure again. And I was just thinking that
if you have that in mind, that I'm the spirit soul, I just need to refine.
Nice. And you mentioned quitting, and even when you quit, I mean, sometimes people take up devotional service for various reasons. Sometimes they're born into it, and then later on they think, like, am I really doing this because I want to or because I was born into it? So then they may quit. But then Krishna helps them to, you know, observe it, the whole thing, and then they decide on their own that, oh, I want to do this. This is actually want to do it. When the will is there, when there, as I mentioned, sincerity, when there's a sincere endeavor, then sometimes one quits, steps back, and then there's a feeling that, okay, I know what I gave up now. There was that old joke. You don't know what you have. You don't know what you've got till it's gone. So I gave away everything so I knew what I had. So there's even in quitting sometimes, not that I'm recommending it, but sometimes internally I've had this experience where it's just, things seem so overwhelming and I just say, okay, I quit, I'm starting over. As if like, whatever I've done so far, I'm not even going to count that. I'm just going to start as a new devotee in my mind. This is it. I'm starting over, and now how do I feel? Well, you've got a lot of assets, so don't count them out. Everything that you've done so far is valuable. Okay, next one. What are the first three? Friendly. Be friendly. We're just trying to be friendly. What's the next one?
Categories,
yeah. Follow the categories. Find the proper category and stay in it and do the best you can in it and you'll be successful. Number three? Refine your practice. Don't take anything for granted. Don't take it for granted and don't feel entitled. But try to refine. That's where the nectar in life comes from. Humans like to refine themselves. And number four, discern what is the main thing. Stephen Covey had a saying, I really like it. He said, make the main thing, how does it go? The main thing is to keep the main thing the main thing. That's it. The main thing is to keep the main thing the main thing. So find out what your main thing is. Don't major in minor things. Don't make a big deal out of things that really don't help you advance in spiritual life. When I was driving down here, I was talking to a God brother, and he was saying, oftentimes he sees, like in social media, people complaining about this or that, argumentative mood. Not necessarily so helpful. Is there something else that could be your main thing besides complaining on the internet? Yeah, thank you. Find out which are the main things and then major in those things. That's how you get successful. And watch out for the minor things because they'll sneak in and they start taking a prominent role in your life and then you feel frustrated because, you know, I'm working really hard, I'm putting energy, but because you're doing the minor things, either doing them first or you're concentrating on them mostly or you're considering them the most important, then you're not feeling the reciprocation and the advancement that you should. So find out what the main things are and then focus on them. Points? Yes.
I just had a point from before where you mentioned about taking things for granted. And I was just reflecting on that and like how like everything is like Krishna's plan. And sometimes it's really hard to, like, in that moment, really think that Krishna is trying to help me. But later, like, in the bigger vision, you see that it was, like, really, it was the best thing that was for you, like, the best choice.
Yeah, it's a really excellent point. It's one of the hardest things to do, is to see how, when your plan's getting messed up, how it's actually a higher plan. But people philosophize like that all the time. You know, they try for it. It's like there must be a higher plan to this or something like that. But this is the quintessential attitude of a person who's properly spiritually situated. According to the verse I just quoted, tat te anukampam su samikshamanu bunjana imatma kritam vipakam. A devotee a sincere practitioner takes it that whatever reversals come in his or her life are coming by Krishna's mercy. And as a result of one's own activities in the world. But there's an implication there that one understands that Krishna is adjusting me. It's a cosmic sensitivity training so that I'll come to the perfect stage of refinement through that. But you're very, very right about that. It's later on we may look back and say, if this hadn't happened, then I wouldn't have gone in this direction and found out more about my relationship with Krishna. And it's Steve Jobs said in his very famous now talk, commencement speech he gave at Stanford, he mentioned three major growth periods or points in his life where he had the most growth. And they were all things that you don't pray for when you wake up in the morning. I mean, the first one was he got kicked out of his own company. Do you remember that? Were any of you around for that? You were all babies at that time. But he got kicked out of his own company. He hired Scully as a CEO, and then Scully said, yeah, we got to get rid of this Steve Jobs guy. And he was kicked out. It's like, wow, I started this in my dad's garage, and now I'm kicked out. But it was a very telling moment when he described this, and I can really relate to this. Is he said, then I really went back to my roots. He said, why did I do this in the first place? And at Reed College, he had studied calligraphy. Did you know that? So one of the main reasons that he came up with these cool scripts, that was the first thing. I had the first SE30. You don't know what that is either. That was the first a super-powered Mac. 30 stood for how much? Yeah. I mean, that was like supercharged. You just wait for like 5 minutes for the next page to come up. It was no big deal. In any case, not to get diverted, but the point was that he went back to think, like, why did I do this in the first place? And, you know, if we do that regularly and think when there's a reversal, like, what am I supposed to be doing? What is the main thing in my life? It can be very clarifying. I did a piece about forest fires recently and how actually when the forest burns, it brings out nutrients that weren't there before. It also activates seeds that don't get activated without heat, which is an interesting part of the ecosystem. They just don't grow unless the fire comes through. And there are a lot of points in our life until we experience a heat. It's a crucible. It actually purifies us, and we're able to bring out some of the points when we experience the fire that we wouldn't normally. So, yes, very important. Yes.
But let's continue going on with Monisha's point that there's a story of Anga and Veena. So Anga wanted to complete the sacrifice, and so he wanted to have a son. And then he gets such a bad son. Then later on he says that maybe it's good that I have a bad son because then I can be detached and go. And that's what he does in the end. He leaves.
That's right. Prayer. Yeah, he took it as a blessing. And you couldn't get a worse son than Veena. I mean, Veena was... His nickname as a kid was Cruel Veena. He used to kill his own friends. And so, yeah, those things that look like a curse are actually Krishna helping us to move forward. If we're able to take it in the spirit of Tateyonukampam, that this is Krishna's arrangement, then one becomes eligible to inherit the kingdom of God. And that's related to this point, I hope. Let me see. I keep the main thing, the main thing. So find out what the main thing is. What are the main things? And focus on them. Major in the main things, not in the minor things. That's number four. What's number one? Be friendly. We're just trying to be friendly. Number two? Categories. That's right. You guys are amazing. Okay, number three? Refinement. Always try to make it a little bit better. It's an eternal process. We're eternally students, and we can always refine it, make it better. I love doing kinds of hand-brain exercises where you start off and you're really clumsy. Like recently I learned to juggle, and I just picked up these three balls. It was kind of a metaphor for my life. And I was just, you know, picked them up. At first they were flying all over the place, hitting this and that. And then, you know, like about the third day, I was able to do like three repetitions. I'm like, wow, that's amazing. How'd that happen? And then after a week, you know, I can go like five times. And now it's like 100's not a big deal. It's like, give me an elephant or something. I'm ready to go. And I just remember that that's like, you could do that with anything. If you find out, you know, what's worthy and you, not the juggling's, you know, and you focus on it, you practice it, you can refine, you can get better. That's worth waking up for, isn't it? When I can get better at something. So know, my point is in number four, know what you should be getting better at and focus on that and improve. And number five is the three S's. What are the three S's? Sangha, sadhana, and seva. So these are, when we're thinking of, you know, what should I do? Where should I, how should I divide my time? Or how should I help others? When other people come to our community, what are the three areas in which we can help them? So the first one is sangha. So this is vital, how we associate. And what are the ways we can organize our lives or adjust them accordingly is to find out good association. A prayer I've mentioned that I often make is, oh Krishna, please give me the best of Vaishnava association and the intelligence to take advantage of it. And, you know, this is the sum and substance of advancement in any discipline, but especially in devotional service. Why? Because the devotees who are advanced carry bhakti within their hearts. And when we come in contact with them, and especially if we render some service and the right attitude, then naturally we become advanced too. So sangha is vital. And when in our community, when people come, we should make sure they're getting the right kind of association, because association is vital. And the next S? Sadhana. So sadhana means that you're practicing towards a goal. And find out what the best balance of sadhana is in your day and make sure you practice it well. I recommend an app. It's called Habit List. I forget how much it costs, but I don't get anything from it. So if you do buy it. But I like it because you can line up your habits for the day, your sadhana, and put the things on it. Like I have on mine, I say that I have my Chad on there. And so, and then I also have Chad Plus. What's Chad Plus? Bhagavatam chapter. I have my 16 rounds on there. I have several other things on my habit list. And then when I finish the habit, I open my app and I push it and I feel satisfaction that, you know, I just took it off my list. So this is a way, in sadhana, you have to be very deliberate. You have to count things, sankhya purvaka, numerical strength. Find out ways to count. Even when we found that Gopinath Patanayaka and his relative, they were put up on the Changa. They were chanting up there, and they make a little mark on their arm to make sure they were counting their rounds while they were incarcerated. So, sadhana, and then the third one? Seva, because? Well, seva will save you. And when people get seva, they feel naturally connected. And we see this everywhere we go. Like, we have programs in the corporate, and if somebody you know, feels a little enthusiastic, say, can I help? And they get a little service, then immediately they feel like, hey, I'm with the group. So when people come to our community, we should make sure that they have some seva. And Prabhupada was really expert at that if there wasn't a service that they could fit into, he'd make a new service so they could fit in, make a new category. So it's important to have our own seva and also to help other people take up some seva. So the three S's are? Sangha, Sadhana, Seva. And if you keep these three S's as primary points in your life, then you'll be happy and successful wherever you go. Okay, so any final comments or reflections about the whole process and the five? Yes.
In the beginning, Maharaj, you mentioned you actually the dual aspect of senses, that controlling senses is difficult, and also sense engagement have their repercussions. And we also read that one who controls the senses is not offensive towards anyone, and that is friendliness.
Yeah, that's right. If you control your senses, you're, and consider yourself a servant or offer service wherever you go, then people will have a natural sense that you're their friend. Because you're not envious. You're not competing with them. It's not like you're when you come there, you're trying to take away their world and whatever. Because if your senses are controlled, then you don't have that. You're really not after anything. You don't have a vested interest. It's interesting to me how living entities can sense a vested interest. Like, oh. And also how we're averse to it, too. If you ever look at like a web page, and for instance, there's news on it, and the little news articles, and then it says paid content. You ever see that? There's a little section that says paid content. It looks like a regular like news presentation, but actually it says paid content, and then you go like, I'm not going in there because they have a vested interest trying to sell me something. So we have a sense that if somebody has a vested interest, they're trying to sell or they want something back, then it becomes repulsive in a way. So when that's gone from the heart, when we're in the mood of selfless service, we see living entities as parts of Krishna, we're trying to do good for them, as the verse points out, that people notice it, become a friend to everybody. I have to leave for Toronto and then Washington, D.C. I think I'm coming back at some point, Krishna willing. Before the end of the year, maybe, I think there's some program somewhere. And then we'll be out till the beginning of next year. And so it's always bittersweet for me. And the sweet part is when I'm here. The bitter part is when I'm taking off. Please take care of each other, of one another, and be friendly. And to all living entities as much as possible. Continue to put your heart into the marathon. I'm going to a few places to help expand the various projects that you're all part of, because we're all together on this great endeavor to expand the distribution of literature. And I'll be thinking of you, missing you, watching in on the various things that you're doing and the scores. So please give it your heart and soul. When the new year comes, the energy goes out. So now's the time. And give as much as you can, as much endeavor as you can. And please forgive me for running off, but I'm way behind in getting ready. And have to. Vamanos. Ikimasu. Domarigato gozaimasu. And we'll see you soon. Vancha kalpata rishcha kripasanabeva cha patitanam pavanibhyo vaishnavibhyo namo namaha. Now we're going to put away all the asans and get ready to dance. We'll have a rousing artik. And thank you to everyone who joined us online. Hare Krishna. Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, hey, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman.